Good morning. The Bible reading this morning comes from the fourth chapter of 1 Peter. 1 Peter 4, verses 1 through 6. Since Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. For the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is why the gospel was preached even to those who were dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does.
It's good to see you out this morning. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate John pinch hitting for Brother Dowdy. He's here in Texas for the holidays. The thought did occur to me, we are coming to near the end of our study of works of the flesh. And this is the last of those which is specifically named, that is carousing. And, you know, I had the thought that kind of what a useless lesson this is this morning for this group. Because if any brethren are tempted to be carousing, they're probably not awake yet this morning and being here. But it does kind of complete the study, so we will continue with it this morning. The word carousing in the English language comes from the Greek word komos. And that word is only used three times in the New Testament. Here, again in Romans 13:13, and in the passage that Jonathan read for us in 1 Peter 4, but in the translation he was reading from, it was translated orgies, not carousing. It's an interesting word, and the reason is that in classical Greek, it has one meaning, but by the time we get to the New Testament, the way it's used in the New Testament, a totally different meaning, and we'll talk about that in just a second. I think the important thing to realize about this word as we begin the study is that it communicates much more about an attitude towards life that finds its expression in certain types of conduct, rather than just the conduct itself. But Paul's point is that the conduct is not acceptable in the life of a Christian because of what it says your life is committed to, what it says your approach to life is. And so we want to look at that for just a few moments this morning. So as we look at this, and we look at this word carousing, as we said, it's from the Greek word komos. And in the classical Greek, that word meant a village festival, according to the Intermediate Greek Lexicon. In Barclay's commentary on flesh and spirit, he compares this word's use to the celebration like the welcoming home of a victorious team, or a victorious athlete, or a victorious general. And so in that sense, it would be much like many of the civic festivals that we see that are very common in the area. I don't know whether West Carrollton still does it or not, but they used to have a paper festival. Since they've knocked down all the mills, I don't know if they're going to do that anymore. But in Bellbrook, we have the Sugar Maple Festival, and Centerville has Americana Days, and Waynesville has the Sauerkraut Festival, and so on and so forth, that are just celebrations. But by the time we get to the Koine or New Testament Greek, it really represents the abuse of such a festive occasion. The use of the occasion to focus on abusive type of conduct. And it's really apparent in the way in which Peter and Paul, who are the two New Testament authors that use the word, actually use the word. In our English translations, we've been looking at that consistently in this series. The New American Standard and the Revised Standard and the New Rye Standard uses this word carousing. The King James and the New King James and the American Standard use the word reveling. Whereas a couple of the modern translations, the NIV and ESV, which is the one in the pulpit, or in the seats, obviously, uses the word orgies. And the International Standard Version just says wild partying. In this case, when you look at our English language, you can see some of the connection. Webster says carousing means to take part in a drinking bout. He defines reveling as to take intense pleasure in something, to be festive. And so in the way Webster defines it, reveling is not as obsessive as carousing is. And then an orgy is a bout of debauchery, a display of excessive indulgence. And so I think the point that we can make here is if we look at the three places this is used in the New Testament, we get a pretty good picture of what the New Testament concept is about these things. First of all, the one that we have been using throughout this series, where our text is the works of the flesh. And here we find that Paul lists the word carousing right after drunkenness. And so it's interesting that in some commentaries they comment and connect the drunkenness and carousing together in making their comments. But carousing is a kind of activity that kind of promotes drunkenness, is the idea. When you go to Paul in Romans 13:13, he says, "Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy." And so as Paul connects these words and he connects carousing with drunkenness, he also adds the idea of the promiscuity and the sensuality. That often all four of these go together. And then finally, in the passage that John read for us, particularly in verse 3 where the word is used, in 1 Peter 4 and verse 3, "The time past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatry." Peter also connects drunkenness and carousing, but in his list he connects with them the idea of sensuality, lust, and drinking parties. And so these things are characteristic of an approach to life, the Gentile way of life. And it's just coincidental that in our Sunday morning Bible class in just a minute, we'll be getting into this in Paul's longer discussion of these things in the first chapter of the book of Romans. But generally speaking, what we have is a contrast in worldviews of what life is all about. And in Jesus' own teaching, he drew a distinction from the way worldly people approach life and the way his disciples are going to approach life. Here's how he characterizes it. In Matthew, in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, 31 and 32. And although our words are not in this passage, what is in this passage is the underlying issue of approach to life. He says, do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. And so what Jesus is saying is the Gentiles view this world purely from the standpoint of this world. That's what their emphasis is. And as a result of that, what we find being expressed as the ultimate approach to that is that it's an approach to this world that just says pleasure. And a number of years ago, one of the adult beverages, their advertising says, you only go around once in life, go with all the gusto. This is all life is about, so better enjoy it with your partying and all of that type of thing. But the Jesus and his apostles, the inspired writers, says there's a different approach to life. In contrast, for the Christian, Paul says, for food is for the stomach and stomach is for the food. But God will do away with both of them, yet the body is not for immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord is for the body. Now God has not only raised the Lord, but will also raise us up through his power. And so we recognize food and drink and all of the physical things about life as being a tool and as a necessity to live in this physical world. But Paul says Christians realize that's not what it's all about. Christians realize that we are living in this body seeking an immortal home. He says it in Ephesians 5 and verse 18. Interestingly enough, in a passage that most often when we go to this part of Ephesians, it's to argue about instrumental music. But the main point is in 5:18, where it says, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. The Christian's approach to life is approaching a Spirit-filled life, recognizing that the things of this world are temporary, and while there is good, and we are definitely designed to live in this body, in this world, that is not all that there is to our existence. And we too are to seek more than that. And so I think the way for us to think about that is to think about what we are talking about in our modern day when we use the word carousing or reveling, as the King James says. This Greek word komos embodies partying and celebrations, and the participants engage in various combinations of the sins of drunkenness and sexual immorality. The party and the obvious effects of the partying is the goal, and it is what they live for. It's been a long time since I worked among a lot of worldly people. You know, I did that for some jobs while I was going to college, and got out of college and preached, and then came to work in a family business where all but one or two of the employees were Christians, and you weren't surrounded by all that. But I do remember my days working at Dayton Steel Foundry, where people on Monday would start talking about getting drunk on Friday, looking forward to the weekend because of that was their idea. I work all week, and I am really going to go for it this weekend. And that idea, I think some pretty clear examples of this type of thing in our modern day are things like college fraternity and sorority parties. And every once in a while, something makes the news about somebody committing some kind of sexually predatory act at one of these, and yet it ignores the fact that the very nature of them is all about drunkenness and sexual immorality. I think of Mardi Gras and similar events to that. Not parades, that type of thing, but the excesses that go on at things like the Mardi Gras in New Orleans or the Carnival in Brazil or something like that, where the idea is just go as wild as you're going to go. Now, the odd thing about those two is that they start out as religious celebrations. And because of the concept of that particular religious point of view, you got to indulge yourself because on the next day a fast starts. So if you're going to be religious, you got to get the worldliness out of the way the day before the fast starts. Well, in Christianity, biblical Christianity, that's not your approach. Your whole life is about the Spirit. It's about the religious service. And thus, that is why you can see that Paul says these works of the flesh include this attitude towards life. It's much more than a simple community festival celebrating its history or its culture. It's much more than a celebration of some happy event like a birth or a wedding or something like that. It is the commitment to the indulgence and the giving in to all of the various aspects of worldly indulgence in the flesh. And so Paul, as he actually introduced the passage in Galatians 5 about the fruit of the Spirit, started it with this admonition, but I say, walk by the Spirit and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. And so it's the underlying worldview. What am I living today and tomorrow and the next day for? Am I living just to have the money and the opportunity to totally indulge my flesh? Well, then I will be very tempted to engage in drunkenness and carousing and sexual immorality and everything of that sort. But if I'm living today and tomorrow and the next day after that with a view that my life is designed to get me to heaven, then I should realize those two things are exact opposites of each other. And I should put away that work of the flesh. So next week, Alan will kind of have a wrap-up lesson in this regard. With holidays, we're missing the person who's also supposed to say the prayer, so I'll say that and then we'll be dismissed to our classes.